Welcome to Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Author and attorney Roberta Grimes will explore and illustrate how she, after an extraordinary experience of light in childhood, has discovered channels of communication to the afterlife and how these implications have an effect on our everyday lives. Please welcome the host of Seek Reality, Roberta Grimes.
Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes, and we're coming to you live on the BBM Global Network and TuneIn Radio. My dear friends, you and I are watching our civilization fall apart around us. The old certainties of our lives are failing. Our safety and our sense of security are crumbling. Strangers are even flooding our borders. People who don't share our values, even people who mean to do us harm, are invading Europe and the United States by the tens of thousands. We can see no end. I'm sorry to have begun our time together with a downer, but you know I wouldn't be talking about this if I weren't about to propose a solution. This may be the most important conversation that you and I will ever have. There is a way to solve all our problems. But before we discuss the solution, let's first talk about just how bad things are now. From the perspective of someone who grew up in the 50s, it looks as if everything is suddenly going off the rails. I'm going to mention just a few lesser crises just to kind of put in your mind what we have to overcome. Half a century ago, antibiotics had us well on our way toward eradicating deaths from communicable diseases. Of course, now, overuse of those drugs has produced new strains of much more virulent germs, and there are experts who say that the easy use of antibiotics is about to end. The plague of deaths from epidemics is returning, and some of them are worried that in the end the germs are going to win. Half a century ago, we could take our future economic progress for granted. Boy, do I remember those days. Now, though, the economics of many Western countries are in crisis. Nearly 100 million unemployed Americans have become so discouraged that they've dropped out of the workforce. That's like a third of the population. And the national debt of the United States has nearly doubled in just 8 years. And if you look around, if you're an American, you realize we have nothing to show for all that new debt. No big road projects, no rebuilt inner cities, no cure for cancer. Nothing. One more. Half a century ago, all Western countries rigorously controlled their borders. Now, watching thousands upon thousands of undocumented immigrants pouring into Europe and the United States is really an incredible spectacle. I mean, we want to help people, but we can't if we don't control borders. We're not a country, whatever country we are. This is what happened to an end-stage Roman Empire that no longer had the will to repel the barbarian hordes that seethed around it. Now, the people coming into these countries, the United States and European countries, aren't barbarians. They're refugees. It's sad and it's tragic. We want to help them. But don't you get the sense that we have to start thinking about how we're going to be able to help them when we can no longer help ourselves? It's a problem. I cannot help suspecting now that we're witnessing in the entire Western world the same kind of decline that befell the ancient Roman Empire. We haven't even mentioned ISIS, have we? And we haven't mentioned the fact that nuclear war seems suddenly to be a more active threat. Modern Western civilization and all the comforts and the prosperity it's brought has been the greatest achievement of the human spirit. I don't think there's any way around that. It's brought freedom on an unprecedented scale, spiritual growth, all the good things. But because we're no longer, I guess, willing to protect it, it's starting to fall apart around us. So today the guest is going to be your host. I've been thinking about this for a while. It's something very important for us to talk about. And I need the time myself to talk about it because it's a very complex topic. We're going to be talking about what actually is going wrong in the world now. Why do suddenly things seem so much worse than they were? I'm going to share with you what the dead are telling us about why these things are happening. And I'm going to tell you where they say things are going from here if we don't stop it. The message that I have to give you about where things are going is a highly personal one. A year and a half ago, my primary spirit guide, Thomas, shared this with me in the process of persuading me that I had to write Liberating Jesus. What he said was, and I should just parenthetically say, the dead can't predict the future, but they seem able to game it. They seem able to look at where the way things are going now and to say, well, if changes don't happen, this is where it's going to end up. They can do it much better than we can. Their perspective is clearer. And frankly, because they have access to their entire minds, they're a lot smarter. So they've been gaming the future, and what they've discovered is that we are on a course over about 200 years, not much time, on a course to a disastrous situation in the world where concentration of wealth and power in the hands of just a very few people, abject poverty, famine, disease, every negative, horrible thing you can imagine will be rampant in the world within 200 years. And it's a direct result of some of the things that we can see around us happening now. In fact, some of these things are actually beginning. If you stop and think about the fact that suddenly we're not as able to control diseases and we got weirder diseases than ever before, if you think about the fact that suddenly we've got a few people with a tremendous amount of money and power and most of us really have none or very little of either, all of these things are starting to happen. And they say that it's going to lead to an end times situation in which actually, he says, what he calls the so-called Christians will start Armageddon in 200 years. I don't know about any of this. We have free will, and our free will gives us the power to change it. But it seems to me that when the dead are alarmed, as they are alarmed now about the situation on Earth, we ought to kind of pay attention. So that's what I'm going to be talking about today, what the dead are telling us about what's going wrong and how to fix it. And I'm going to tell you how we can fix it and how, in fact, we're the only ones who can fix it. I think that's something that we may not think about that enough. We have tremendous power. The tremendous power we have comes from the fact that our minds are so powerful. We have no idea how powerful they are. We create everything around us with our minds. Your thoughts actually are actions. And because that's true, we have the ability to fix this. So we're going to talk about that today, how we're going to fix it, and why it's going to take, frankly, you and me and our several friends to do it. It's not something one person can do, but a surprisingly small number of people on Earth can fix it all. I'm not going to take questions today or calls, although I'm tempted to because I think some people are probably saying, what? But what I'm going to try to do is as much as possible explain what's going on and then urge you, if you're troubled by this, to contact me through robertagrimes.com. I don't want to upset you, but I do want to alert you because knowledge is power in a situation. So this is going to be a fairly serious conversation, but I think you'll see in the end that it has a very good ending. My dear friends, if we are ever to right what's wrong in the world, we first got to figure out what's gone wrong and why it's gone wrong. And for us to do that is going to require a little dose of cutting-edge physics. Now, what's the joke in this is that I didn't even take physics in high school. I'm glad I didn't because I would have had a lot of things to unlearn. But the thing, I'm going to make this easy for you. Physics is actually pretty easy to understand if you only talk about quantum physics and its effects and if you don't mess with math. I hate math. So I'm going to try to make this simple for you, and we're going to follow the leading quantum physicist in history. As I've been saying on Seek Reality, mainstream scientists are basically clueless about what reality actually is, and for a really, really stupid reason. A century ago, the scientific gatekeepers, the university departments, the peer-reviewed journals, established materialism as what they called the fundamental scientific dogma. They did that specifically so they wouldn't have to look at the very good communications now being received from the dead, now 100 years ago, being received from the dead. We don't want to look at that stuff. That's all for those folks. We're just going to look at material stuff. They continue to enforce materialism to this day, even though for many decades it's been clear that, as the great physicist Max Planck, my big hero, said, 3/4 of a century ago he said this, there is no matter as such. So we, for almost a century, have had scientists insisting on studying something which essentially does not exist and ignoring whatever it can of the rest. But even despite this handicap of having to adhere to an erroneous materialist dogma, there have been a few scientists who've done wonderful work that jibes beautifully with what the afterlife researchers who have been working on this have learned from people we used to think were dead. Based on what the dead tell us, and based on the visionary work of a few courageous scientists like Max Planck, we can now actually begin to talk about what reality is with considerable confidence. It's nothing like what you see around you. In fact, all of this is an illusion, but we begin to understand what's real. And please listen carefully to this. It's very important, because unless we really understand how this works, we won't be able to transform anything. Based on nearly 200 years of abundant and consistent communications from people we used to think were dead, we can say with confidence now that the only thing that exists is this: an infinitely powerful, energy-like potentiality without size, without form, alive in the sense that your mind is alive, highly emotional and therefore probably self-aware. That's the best definition. I didn't make it up, but that's the best definition I've ever seen of what it is we're discovering that the genuine God actually is. And it is the only thing that exists. I'll just say again briefly, as I've said before, whenever I've talked about the genuine God is nothing like what any religion ever has worshipped. In fact, all of the things that the religions ascribe to God tend to be sort of human failings, often magnified. God's not judgmental. God's not jealous. None of the things that I learned as a child in Christian Sunday school has anything to do with a genuine God. But that's what God is. Fortunately, all our minds are part of that great potentiality, and we refer to it as consciousness. That's how we experience God, as consciousness. Of course, no scientist has any idea of what consciousness is, and that's for a very important, sad reason. Their materialist dogma requires them to think that consciousness is something ephemeral that's generated by your brain. Your brain makes it. When you die, it disappears. That's nonsense. In fact, exactly the opposite is true. Eternal consciousness is what underlies everything, and your brain just picks up its signal. So what does this mean? It means that your mind and my mind are inextricably part of the only thing that actually exists, which is eternal mind. Everything else that we think is real is just an illusion created and held in being by that one consciousness of which we're all a part. Doesn't that sound simple? But it's what's actually going on. Of course, for people who are still sadly in the thrall of the false scientific dogma of materialism, we should just add here that Max Planck, the father of quantum mechanics, the big scientific hero, one of the two greatest physicists of the 20th century, he discovered the primary role of what we experience as consciousness long before the dead ever revealed it to us. Way back in 1931, Dr. Planck said, "I regard consciousness as fundamental. I regard matter as derivative from consciousness. We cannot get behind consciousness. Everything we talk about, everything we regard as existing, postulates consciousness." And then in 1944, he said, "There is no matter as such. All matter originates and exists only by virtue of a force which brings the particle of an atom to vibration and holds this most minute solar system of the atom together. We must assume behind this force the existence of a conscious and intelligent mind. This mind is the matrix of all matter. That's our dear friend Max. But unfortunately, the scientists of his day ignored Dr. Planck's inconvenient discoveries. And I think it's kind of sad to this day when I talk with someone who is a physics student or someone in that area, they're outraged that I quote him. I mean, these are only his words. Why shouldn't he have a right to be heard, actually? I mean, he did so much for scientists. It seems to me that this, which I think is the most important discovery of the 20th century, and he made it, I think he ought to be celebrated for it and not ignored. But they don't like it that those of us in this field who talk about this use his quotations. Nevertheless, he was very discouraged eventually by the fact that no matter what he said, he couldn't get anyone to listen to him. In 1948, he said, kind of sadly, "A new scientific truth does not triumph by convincing its opponents and making them see the light, but rather because its opponents eventually die and a new generation grows up that is familiar with it." Of course, we've had maybe three generations of scientists grow up still refusing to become familiar with the truth. But I just want to say to our dear friend, Dr. Planck, I am so grateful that he has tried so hard to make us understand the truth. And he's going to win this one. I think with another 50 to 100 years, a much more enlightened scientific community is going to celebrate Max Planck and celebrate the discovery of the genuine God as the greatest discovery of the 20th century and maybe of all of human history. Eventually, the truth always wins. We're going to recap because I've kind of wandered a little bit. The only thing that objectively exists is an energy-like potentiality that we experience as consciousness. That is God. We are part of that consciousness. Every human mind is part of that consciousness. So what does that say? Something simple. All our minds are intimately connected, intimately. That's why psi phenomena, reading the minds of the dead or reading human minds, all kinds of connections we feel with other people. We think of someone and the phone rings. It's all of that makes perfect sense when you understand our minds are part of a single mind. And as part of consciousness, we all are co-creators of the reality that we think we see around us. Now, God, consciousness, didn't sort of start this as a kind of clockwork machine which goes blindly forward, but instead there are minute adjustments being constantly made by consciousness, and those minute adjustments are what enable the universe to even exist continuously. This is not something which scientists, I think, have any clue about, but in fact it's what's happening. So the fact that we are co-creators with consciousness, with mind, is bad news. It means the problems we have around us, we've caused. But it's really, really good news. It also means that we have the power to fix whatever we've broken. And to understand how we can go about doing that, let's first try to understand what's gone wrong. It turns out that the energy-like potentiality, that's all that exists, has a vibratory range from the highest, and that's perfect love, to the lowest, which is abject fear, and all fear's correlates like, oh, anger, envy, hatred, grief, all the negative things. If a feeling would make you go, blech, that's part of the lowest energy. And everything in between. Now, each of us is repeatedly choosing between love and fear in big ways and in small ways all day and every day. As we drive in traffic, as we deal with people, as we manage our families and friends, as we post things online, as we work, everything we do, everything is located on that spectrum between love and fear. We don't think of this as we go about our day. We don't think of the things we do as making choices between love and fear. But when you go about your day tomorrow, think about it. As you're driving is the best place to do this. As you're driving, think, was that decision to turn on my blinkers or to cut someone off or whatever I did, was that made out of love or out of fear? Or hatred or anger, all of the correlates of fear. When you start being aware of what you're doing, paying attention, it will surprise you how many times you kind of wince at yourself, that Yeah, if I'd been realizing it mattered, I might have done something a little more generous in my life than whatever I did. So as we make these daily choices, each of us is minutely either raising or lowering the spiritual vibration of consciousness over all the earth. This is a very important concept to understand. I mean, we've all sort of heard someone say, I'm not even sure where this comes from, a little story. If a butterfly flaps its wings in Mongolia, it affects the whole world. Well, I don't know if that's true, but if you think a negative thought, you help to lower the spiritual vibration of the entire world. If you think a loving thought, you help to raise it, not by a lot, not one person, but by some. It makes a huge difference how you live your life. We have, I don't think, ever been made to understand that. We think of life as dog eat dog. It is not dog eat dog at all. It is an exercise in learning how to love more perfectly. That's why we're here. What seems to have happened is that for centuries, because we didn't know better, too many of us have made low energy choices. We haven't understood the consequences of choosing anger and aggression over kindness and love. And then, of course, the bloody 20th century must have produced a lot of low energy vibrations. So we're in trouble now. Those we used to think were dead can't actually predict the future, as I said, but they are telling us that they have known for more than 100 years we were on a course to disaster. They began 100 years ago to work through people to begin to raise the consciousness of the planet. This is a complicated process for them. We tend to think God can just snap his fingers and do this, do that, but that's not how it works. The people who actually are God's minions, because God is not a person, God is an energy. These people are trying very hard to do this work, but they've got to do it themselves and through people on earth primarily. We have free will. So we have the opportunity to make changes, which means that the future they see, which is not a good one, isn't set in stone. But the dead tell us that what's likely to happen if changes are not made, as I said, my dear friend Thomas, my spirit guide, gave us a pretty bleak picture. Others are being given the same picture by their own guides, who are frankly alarmed. But they also tell us that they can, and actually I feel it too, now that I know what we're looking for, I can feel that it's already beginning to change. And they tell us now that we are going to prevail, that each of us will do what we need to do, and we're going to prevail. I'm not sure how best to help you understand how urgent this is, but let's stop and think for a minute about what reality is telling us, what the dead tell us is really the meaning and purpose of our lives. We're here to learn to grow spiritually. That's why we're here. So it's been handy, I think, for the past many millennia for us not to get that. If you don't know you're here to learn a certain lesson, then learning it maybe is going to be tougher, and you'll do it better. But what they've come to understand, the most senior entities who are running this planet and running this system, what they've come to understand is that we've obviously gone too far in the wrong direction. So they want us now to understand why we're here. And we're here for a very simple reason. Everybody who is listening, all your neighbors and friends, every person on the face of the earth is here to learn how to grow spiritually. I've been trying to scare you and trying to tell you, but it's going to be okay. I don't want you to think it's going to be okay if you and I don't try, but I also am hoping to convince you to try, because you have nothing to lose and everything to gain in your personal life, as well as in attempting to save the world, if you'll do what I'm going to suggest to you. We have a problem. It's clear we have a problem. The dead are telling us we have a problem, and we can see it around us. It's a scary problem, and it's already begun. But we can fix it, you and I, and it won't even be hard. As I've said earlier, those that we used to think were dead have already been working on this. They've been working on it for the better part of a century. And They're working to prevent the escalation in negativity and the collapse into barbarism that's begun to seem, you know, almost likely to them at this point. And apparently one of the things they're doing is loosening the power of science and religion in our minds. We see a sort of decline in respect for science, although we still sort of think, I mean, what do you have except science? You got to like them, but they're a little frustrating because they're not doing much more lately. But we see a rapid decline in religious practice. We think that's a bad thing, but in fact, it's a good thing. Because in order for the dead to do what they need to do, which is to help us to understand what's true, they've got to get rid of old superstitions. Religions are superstitions. God doesn't establish religions, people do. This is something, a whole topic for another day, but it's important to understand that. I mean, we are meant to relate to God directly. We could not possibly be closer to God than we already are. Any religion just gets in our way. But all of these things are big new concepts for us to understand. And it's important that as we begin to try to understand them, we not be fearful. And that's why it's, I think, one of the main reasons why it's taking so long for the dead who are working on this to turn the ship, because they don't want us to be alarmed. They want us to come along with this, understand the concepts, be part of the solution. And that's, I think, beginning to happen now. I think it's a very exciting time to be alive. All right, let's talk about what consciousness means in an individual context. As I say, I have never seen any indication that that scientists have any clue about what consciousness is. And the reason is probably because they think it's produced by the brain. They're looking for a source of consciousness in the brain, which is like looking for a source of your favorite actors inside the television set. It's exactly the same thing. The television set receives the TV show. Your brain receives the mind. It's that simple. But what is consciousness in your life? It's what you also would call your spirit. It's the same thing. So what we're talking about here is your spiritual development. The dead tell us that the key to repairing civilization and beginning the advent of a glorious new world is for as many of us as possible to raise our personal spiritual vibration. That's it. That's all. Think how simple that is. Of course, now what you're thinking is, oh, is that what she was going on? I don't even want to listen to the rest. Listen to me, please. This is not a churchy thing. Churches have nothing to do with spirituality. It doesn't matter what they tell you. This is a personal relationship between you and God. And the fact is that most of your eternity, most of your life, and you are eternal, your mind is eternal, you can't make it any other way. It's eternal by its very nature. And nearly all of it is spent in a glorious reality, much, much nicer than anything any of us can imagine. And the level of spiritual attainment that you have on earth is going to determine how much fun you have when you get there. I call my book, the first book I wrote in this series, The Fun of Dying, for a reason, because it's way more fun there than it is here. And the more spiritually you are developed, the more fun you're going to have. So for heaven's sake, let's do what's good for us. Let's try to make it so that we can make this our last earth lifetime. It's a lot better there than it is here. And then when we get there, we'll have a ton of fun. So that's what spiritual development is. That's what is going to raise the consciousness of the planet and basically transform it. But it isn't even hard. I mean, I think that's the big takeaway that I hope you will take from today. You can do this. It's not hard. It's easy. It's the best possible thing you can do for yourself. And it's such a glorious thing you can do for the world. How will it transform the world? Everything that is negative now will be gone. It'll be impossible. Think of whatever is the worst thing you see on the news can't happen anymore. Think of ISIS, can't happen anymore. Think of wars. None of that can ever happen again when we raise the spirit, the planet's consciousness sufficiently. So doesn't that sound a lot better than what we have now? I mean, we've been trying for thousands of years as a species to make things better, and we've not succeeded, frankly, at all. I mean, having electricity in a computer is not making things better when there still is so much suffering, pain, fear, and all the negative stuff going on. Well, once we attack the negative stuff, which is what we're talking about doing today, going, getting to the heart of the problem and fixing it once and for all and forevermore, once we do that, we can still have electricity, computers, and whatever else you'd like, but we can have them in an atmosphere of constant joy. No fear ever again. That's what I'm asking you to help me to join me in doing for all of humankind. So I hope that gets you a little bit more interested in what we're talking about. It's impossible for you to think a negative thought or a positive thought, do a negative thing or a positive thing without having it affect everybody else on Earth. Not by a lot, but by a little. You're being affected by the terrorists, by people who are hateful and angry and all of the negativity we see on TV. That's affecting your mind right now. And it's a very negative spiral that we're in. We're told by the dead we can't get out of it on our own unless we do what I'm talking about today. There isn't another way really to fix it. So when we come back, I'm going to tell you what it is you need to do if you want to help to fix the world and incidentally make your eternal life glorious. And you'll be amazed to see how easy it all is. Here we are, dear friends. The dead tell us we've got to raise our spiritual vibrations and do it fast if we hope to arrest our slide into barbarism and create a stable and peaceful world. And once we do it, we get that peace, that stability, that love, that joy can be eternal. And it turns out that the dead also tell us that trying to raise our spiritual vibration is the reason why we even are in bodies at all. It's the reason. There is no other. And that means doing what I'm about to suggest to you is a twofer. Come into Earth lives purely to achieve more rapid spiritual growth. And if we just carry out our own life's purpose, we also will be doing the most we can do to transform and to heal the world. Before we go on to talk about how we can achieve this extraordinarily and wonderful result, let's make two important points. The first is that nothing else we might do to try to fix the world's problems is going to be of any help. Nothing. In fact, everything else we might try is likely to make things even worse. Stricter government actions, more laws, wars, regulations. What else can we do to fix the world? All of those other measures that we might try, they've been used already before anyway, right? But they're only going to spike fear in people. That's why, by the way, we know there'll never be an Armageddon, because it would create monstrous fear over all the earth and be the exact opposite of what Jesus came to bring us. So you can take that to the bank. The dead tell us there'll be no Armageddon, and boy, you can see why that would be the worst thing that could happen. But that's a digression. Nothing else we do beyond raising our personal spiritual vibrations can fix the world's problems, which, if we don't fix them, are going to get worse. So what choice do we have? Dear friends, now is the time, and we are the people who once and for all will transform the world. It's time for us to try. We've tried everything else. Time for us to try to do it right. Second point, if the thought of growing spiritually does not appeal to you now, just please think again. Spiritual growth feels terrific. It means elevating your mental state from worries and stresses and fears and every negative thought toward a constant state of peace and love and happiness and joy. You'll never, once you have begun this process and gotten into it, you'll never really experience any other emotion. Even when something goes wrong, whatever it is, doesn't much affect you. Peace and joy are your constant state. Have you ever been really in love with someone? Well, that's the closest feeling I can think of to the way that genuine spiritual growth feels. Only now you're going to be in love with every human being on the face of the earth, including yourself. Growing spiritually makes you intensely happy. All right, so now do I have your attention? Are you willing to maybe try this with me? There may be other ways that could also work for you, but I'm going to tell you what I've found is the easiest and most complete method for achieving spiritual growth. And when I tried this, it took no more than 3 months for me to begin to see permanent changes in the way I felt that continue to intensify to this day. I give much more detail about these three simple steps in my most recent book, The Fun of Growing Forever, but I'll summarize them for you here. The whole point of these exercises is to reorient the way that your mind views the world. It's that simple. It can help a lot if you've done enough study of the evidence to be sure that your mind is eternal, because that's a great way to reduce fear, and reducing fear is a big part of this work. But otherwise, there really isn't much you need to do to get ready. When you fully understand why doing this matters for your own sake, then just set aside a few months' time, try to minimize negativity in that time so you can focus on reorienting your mind. And then the first step is to cultivate an attitude of gratitude. Make gratitude your mindset. This doesn't by itself do a lot, but what it does is to prepare your mind for the second step, which is really tough. Keeping a gratitude journal helps a lot. Just for a couple of months, every day, write down one thing you're grateful for and why you're grateful for it. And that's easy usually for the first 3 weeks or so, even the first month. Into the second month, you've got to be, you know, grateful for mosquitoes and whatever, grateful that there was no bacon for breakfast, whatever it is. And that gets to be harder. After you've really become comfortable that you are feeling very grateful, you have to learn to forgive everything once and for all so nothing ever bothers you again. You can't forgive each thing individually. It is too hard. But your mind is lazy, and if you give it a couple of months in which you refuse to let anything bother you, there's a state you can begin to enter in which is as if all the levers people use to be able to yank and upset you become disabled on the inside. Nothing bothers you then. It's hard to describe how this feels, but it's wonderful to have already forgiven everything in the past, and so nothing in the future ever will bother you again. There are exercises in the book I don't have time to share, but it works very well. And the third step, of course, is loving everyone perfectly. But what the miracle is, this miracle is that once you have cultivated an attitude of gratitude, once you have learned ultimate forgiveness, and it takes 3 months maybe to do those two steps, what you begin to find is you start loving people naturally. It's not something you have to separately, you know, do as an exercise. Love is your natural state. Why this works is simple. I didn't realize it at the time I was doing it, but the reason is simple. You are part of the perfect mind of God. You are already at the highest vibration, but you've forgotten that because you've come to believe in this illusion that we're living in. All that these exercises do is to remove that belief you have and reorient you toward what you naturally are, which is already a perfect, perfect being. It takes you, if you do these things for just a few months, you will never be the same. And all you need to do is maintain them a little bit, and forevermore, you'll be operating at a much, much happier, higher, more joyous, more perfect vibratory level. And you'll be doing the best possible thing you can to give yourself your own best life now and your own best life eternally, and you'll be doing the best thing, really the only thing you can do to help with fixing the world. We're told by the dead that if it's just a few percent, I think maybe 10% is what I tell most people, if just 10% of us would do this, we will transform the world and there'll never again be another war, no hatred, no anything negative. So it's time we begin. Thank you for joining us today. My dear friend, you are a powerful, eternal being. You never began and you never will end. And when you really get all the implications of that fact, it's going to change everything in your life for the better. Next week, our guest will be Johanna Carroll. She'll give us another view on loving. Johanna is a spiritual counselor, radio host. She's an author and a metaphysical teacher. And since what we all most need to do now is learn how to really love perfectly, I thought it would be good for us to hear from an expert on love who comes to us from the New Age movement. Her recent book is The Lost Art of Loving, and you're going to love her. She's hysterical. Please join us next week. This time, our guest has been your host. My dear friends, our minds are all part of the infinitely powerful mind that continuously brings forth the universe. So you and I and everyone we know are co-creators of the broken and sadly failing world we see around us. That's good news, actually, because it means we have the power to fix it simply by elevating ourselves spiritually. There are a variety of ways to do this. My book, The Fun of Growing Forever, I think has the easiest way in it. But the easiest way of all is right there in the Gospels. Jesus taught us all of this 2,000 years ago. I think what's fascinating to me, really, is that the things that Jesus said, we can now confirm. He gave us a system, and his system works magnificently well. However you do it, let's do this together. The world that we are going to save will be our own. As you know, my nonfiction books are Liberating Jesus, My Thomas, Flying High in Spirit, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, and The Fun of Growing Forever. I also am beginning a 7-novel series. The first novel is out. It's called Chieftain's Maiden, and there will be 5 of the 7 novels will actually be available by the fall of 2017. I love doing fiction, and this series is important to me because it's really working through an intellectual kind of exercise I've been doing since the 70s, trying to understand what a world would be like in which people actually live the way the dead say we should live and actually live the way Jesus said we should live. And that's what this is about, but it covers almost 500 years. It takes a while for us to get there. The novels can be read independently. Each is, I think, a very good story by itself, but together they tell this larger story. And I hope that you'll think about reading one and maybe reviewing it, because I have so much fun writing that it should be against the law. You can find recent episodes of Seek Reality on bbmglobalnetwork.com, and episodes going back a few years are being rebroadcast now on Dream Vision 7 Radio and on the X-Zone Broadcast Network and its affiliates worldwide at xzbn.net. They're also available as free podcasts on webtalkradio.net and on iTunes. For more information, or if you'd like to contact me, just go to robertagrimes.com. I do answer my emails. I tell people, if you don't hear within 24 hours, send flowers. And what's wonderful is that there are some days when I have a lot of trouble meeting that 24-hour deadline now. I'm hearing from more and more people. And every time I get to help someone, or there's something, a question I can answer, I can't tell you how good it makes me feel. I'm sort of drunk on the joy of helping people to realize the things which are really there. It's your birthright for you to know these truths, and when you know them, it makes you so happy. So I just want as many people as possible to understand the truth. Contact me if you have questions. Meanwhile, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being and you are infinitely loved.
This has been Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Tune in each week and discover the nature of reality and God, past, present, and future, in a way that can only be told by Roberta Grimes on the next episode of Seek Reality.